Right, okay.
So, if I press record, yes,
Right, I could say a little bit about Art East. It started in 1980, late 85, beginning of 1986. And it's basically people who were moving into the area, at least half of the members, if not all of the members. No, it was about half the members of Art East actually lived in the area. And we're talking about four people, four households or so, maybe four artists. And after moving into the area, and we all had our individual stories in terms of settling into the area, we met and then decided that it would be a good idea if we could grow as a group and attract members, maybe from just outside the area. Who wanted to actually show work, and they might be based elsewhere, because there was a couple of people who lived. Vanda didn't live in the area, but she became a member, and Daniel Gibson as well. He also became a member in the late 85. People just wanted to kind of join groups and see what would develop. That happened. Then Art East secured the temporary gallery in 86, beginning of 86, and then had their first show in 86 in March. I should say that I went to college in the area, so I had gone to college from 1980 to 83, and then I'd spent a couple of years living in East London. And then secured this Acme property with Mark and Sheila in 85. So there were quite a number of people from who were moving to the area, and this was their first few early years as artists. So joining together and forming an art collective seemed a pretty good thing to do. It sort of gave strength to numbers. So when Art East was up and running as a sort of group of artists and showing, we had obviously the Leytonstone High Road, the temporary gallery, which was a disused bathroom showroom which was converted for showing. And we also, as a group, wanted to show in other parts of London, so there were other exhibitions that we involved ourselves with, either participated or organized. And they were my sort of CV as regards art exhibitions that I'd been involved in. And so from I was showing before 1986, and in 1986, after the Art East group show at Leytonstone, there was Artists in Newham, which was at the Theatre Royal in Stratford, London E15, and that was August 1986. There was also another artist show at Union Chapel. It might also have been the case that some of the members of Art East would show elsewhere as Art East members, but they would join other artists for whatever the exhibition was about. So the Union Chapel exhibition in summer 1986 was other people other than Art East members. Then in 1986 we had another exhibition at the Temporary Gallery, and this was after several people had already shown and showed interest there, other artists. And then we had I was part of Artists in Newham group show, because Newham was quite close by. It's a sort of another London borough close to Waltham Forest. And I got to know people in Newham, and consequently had an exhibition with other people separate to Art East in November 1986.
So those artists in Newham, was that a studio complex down in Newham?
There was a studio complex in Newham, which was like Delphi, Maryland Artists. There was a Tom Allen Center. The Tom Allen Center, which was up and running for a number of years, and people who showed there were artists who lived in the immediate vicinity, so they got get they could be eligible for showing at a Tom Allen Center, because you had to be really, or else be able to put on a particular type of show that they wanted to include in their program. And the Tom Allen Centre was a mixed arts centre, so it wasn't just visual arts. There was performance, they had a theatre there. There's a lot of other programmes as well, outreach programmes for certain groups within society, either ethnic minorities or people who had special needs or whatever. And there was a lot of artists who lived in Newham as well. There was about as many artists who lived in Newham as there were in Waltham Forest, in as much as Newham was like the gateway through to the to Whitechapel and Brick Lane, and there was a lot of artists who lived right through up into the city and then going the opposite direction, I think, in towards the docks or whatever. So Newham had a focus of art activities, and certainly a lot of people who were artists in Newham lived in short life housing. So the arts, the housing co-ops that were able to supply housing also provided housing for artists, all very much on the same similar basis as ACME did, but without having to be called an artist housing association. So yeah.
And actually, I remember Tom Allen Centre showing Zarina Bindji's work and Shaheen Morelli. And they seem to have a little bit of funding as well, certainly for publicity.
Yes, yes. I think the Tom Allen Centre was very good at providing a platform for art. It was all... There was funding. There was definitely funding for exhibition program. So, but it just happened to be outside. We didn't actually qualify for an exhibition there. Only if we joined Newham Artists in some capacity. So I think when when the gallery closed, I think people took the opportunity to join other organisations, either in Newham or elsewhere.
So, could you go on and say a little bit more about the artist shows? Because there were quite a number of them, weren't there?
I think probably 9 shows or something like that. I might be wrong. It might have been, I think it was 8 or 9 exhibitions. I can't remember exactly who was showing, but I've certainly got about 4 or 5 invites. Private view cards from that time. There was a wall hanging space so people could show paintings. There was floor space so people could show sculptures. It was accessible, open to the public during the hours of 9 till 5. It was on the street, on the high street, and it had large windows so people could actually see work inside, so it wasn't some separate sort of entity space, very, very much visible from the street. And after the first exhibition opened, there was a steady flow of people from the street who would come and just look at the work. It was on 2 floors, so there was a ground floor and there was an upstairs, and the lighting was good. It's all very simple. It wasn't a case where we didn't have provision for showing videos, so we were really catering for 2- and 3-dimensional work, and certainly no performance could take place because the floor wasn't that sound. It had liner floor, which was very, very badly damaged, and in the end we had to literally take the floor, the liner tiles up, which left a very rough screeded floor underneath, so it wasn't possible to put on dance there or anything like that. And I don't think our contacts allowed us to entertain that possibility. Certainly Tom Allen Centre down the road would have been able to kind of host such activities.
Your work at the time, what was you doing?
I was making sculpture. I'd been making sculpture from 1983, since I'd left college, so I'd had a year and a half of making work, and I had a lot of materials and some tools, not many tools, a few tools to my name, and I, it was a case of transferring, moving studio, and then carrying on working. And I carried on working in a similar scale, similar materials, and sort of joined forces with Mark, and then produced work so that you could have an exhibition, which Art East Temporary Gallery afforded. We were also contacting schools in the area, so we had other opportunities to show and talk about work. And I carried on in that way until I took up the railway arch, which was after 103 Dyers Hall Road, so I just simply moved studio again. So I was able to kind of be consistent with the nature and scale of my work, and I didn't really change from making sculpture. I made sculpture from 1985 till 94.
So could you talk a bit more about the schools projects and the workshops you did?
Yes, as part of contacting Waltham Forest Arts Council for either as Art East members or as individual artists for that matter, because they were obviously looking for shows at the William Morris Gallery and later on at the Changing Room Gallery. We were getting to know schools in the area, as Art East Gallery was a kind of opportunity for arts to be shown in the area, and we were trying to encourage schools to visit, either tell their students about it or else organise trips, which they did do, I think. And then as a result of that, some of the schools in the area got to know individual artists, and we were able to follow up with residencies or workshops or whatever in various school sites. Some of the residencies actually became quite well funded by the Waltham Forest Arts Council, in as much as they could run a residency for a whole week. I did a couple of residencies, I think, which were amounted to a couple of days, really. There was a week residency, and that was a nominal fee of about £50. Mm.
How else did you support yourself?
Oh, supporting ourselves was a perennial problem. Yeah. Fortunately, rents were very, very peppercorn. And so all we had to do was find, I think, about £20-30 a month. So food was main concern, but because we lived as in households, even that was being partially dealt with, unless people had particular dietary needs, people could sort of share the housing cost, the bills. So yeah, it was a matter of finding part-time work or I don't know, selling work or whatever. It was a very hand-to-mouth existence, I think.
Yeah. So what sort of part-time jobs did you do?
Well, eventually I got work in a college as a technician. Mm. And that was in 1985. And that was on the strength of having an exhibition in 1985, which was a two-person exhibition, and that was separate to Art East, because I'd produced work up until 83. From 83 to 85, I had enough work to have possibly a one-person show, but I didn't feel confident to have a one-person show, so I shared a joint exhibition with a painter at a gallery in Stoke Newington, and that was funded. We paid for it ourselves, hired a gallery, put the exhibition on, and on the strength of that show, I was able to be considered for a job in an art college. By that time, I think I needed to address my working career. Apart from making art, I needed to become employed permanent basis of some sort to make contacts. So up until 83, before I moved into the area, I was working part time. I was doing some night shift work at Sainsbury's, and I was working in a school's project, which was in off Marland Road, and that was involving teaching kids in an after schools capacity, and that was called Centre Play. So that provided, I think that was three evenings a week, provided some sort of income.
Yeah. So did somebody from East London University come to your show and then offer you the teaching?
Well, what they did was they came to the show, and a lot of students from that college came over. And I had actually gone to that college in 80 to 83. And then I spent a couple of years out of college working. And I guess I was looked at as an art student who continued working, produced work. And the work was fairly substantial. I mean, talking about life-size sculpture, and there was several pieces. And I think I was more or less gagging for an exhibition. And so I had the opportunity of showing. I was quite pleased with that. And I obviously invited people I knew who were either studying at college or working at college. And some of the college fraternity came over and were pleasantly surprised and impressed by the possibility of work developing by people they knew. And Vortex Gallery had also opened its doors as an exhibiting area in London.
Yeah.
And was had quite a reputation, really, because it was an arts venue. It was a bit further afield and further into London, and it hosted jazz concerts, had a bookshop which sold a cross section of books. Serious book collecting went on there, and it also had a cafe, so it was able to cater for the local artistic intelligentsia, so to speak, who used it as a meeting ground.
It was
on Stoke Newington Church Street.
It's still running.
It's become it's focused on music as a music venue, because it's become, I think, as music venues have closed over recent years in London, like for instance, or moved. I know the jazz cafe is still running, but so certain places did close by the early 90s, and I think the Vortex was very popular as a music venue. It became solely a music venue with the cafe. I think the bookshop is still there, and an art shop is there, but the exhibiting space closed, I think, in early 90s. But for at least 4 or 5 years, it was up and running as an artex, as a show space.
And what about your own work and the materials that you was using? You know, because obviously sculpture materials are quite expensive, so how did you choose to...
Well, those materials was a case of salvaging materials. That was simply the only way we could lay our hands on some kind of quantity of materials affordably, and unless it was some special sort of item, either by buying it in a builder's merchants was one possibility, or if it was paints and such like canvas, then obviously you had to go to an art gallery. For myself, I was able to get timber, wood for carving, and stone from places where they were salvaged. There was actually builders merchants who sold stone as well in Tottenham in North London, and I remember buying building stone. You can get building stone at a reasonable price. Metal, steel, well, there was a lot of scrap merchants around who were able to sell directly to the public, provided you didn't mind walking in a scrapyard.
Mm.
Now it's a bit different, so you can't really buy metal in that way. You have to buy it from stock. My materials, I mean, steel is not an expensive material. It's you could buy lengths of steel for £10-15. It's still affordable to buy material new in that way.
Are there not any more scrap yards?
There are scrap yards, but they don't encourage members of the public to their much bigger concerns. They've got heavy plant, they've got either magnetic lifting devices, so they can't afford. The health and safety now is so much a concern that unless you're wearing a hard hat and you have legitimate business delivering scrap metal, you can't walk around as you used to in mid-80s. In fact, when I was working as a technician, when we ran out of steel, a group of students would just take the college van and go and spend a day out in the scrapyard selecting material to the tune of about £100 in terms of a budget, and that for that amount of money you could buy a ton of steel. Now the price has gone up, and also you can't access those kind of yards that easily. I'm not involved in a college at the moment, so I can't really speak whether it's possible to. They might have found other substitutes, I don't know.
So, what about, have you covered all the sort of shows that you did around that time?
I think I was showing between 1985. My first show was at the Vortex Gallery, and that was after I'd produced work and I was living in a bedsit in Stratford. E15, and then I had to move out of that place because the landlord was thinking about moving, selling up and moving. So I was able to apply, Acme being one of the places I applied for housing, and the other one was a housing co-op in East Ham. And because I moved into the Acme property, that then meant that I could carry on working. I started working at the college in 1985, so certainly by the time I was in Acme, in Leytonstone, and in Art East, I was working full time as a technician. So even fortunately, I was able to carry on working. I was in as much as the time I had.
Yeah.
And also, after about a year in that job, it became the post was split between two people because I think I made a request to. To work part time, to do my own work, because I had a studio space, so I didn't want to lose that opportunity. So I was working part time. Mark was working as a technician in later years at the college. By that time, we're talking about 1990s, so things were very different by then.
And also, Gary Doherty.
Yes, he does. I think he still does. In fact, I should credit Gary with the idea of Art East Collective, because even though it was a fairly kind of group development, Gary was one of the main moving forces behind the idea of approaching the owner of the temporary gallery. And in fact, the idea of Art East Collective, I think he thought it was a good way, a good description for us. And he was our mouthpiece, in as much as anything that needed to be broached with other people. Gary was really very keen to take up the advocacy of the group as such. So, he was instrumental.
And did Mark, I think you said Mark Seldon, started working at East London after you, or was it around the same time?
He started, I think, in 89, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that was after the job, 88, after the job became, when the job was split, I think that was 1988. It was split because I gave up the job in 1988. Working full-time was really, really difficult, so I gave up the job. I became self-employed, and then they decided to split the job, so they realized that practicing artists would find it difficult to work full-time as well as produce work. So the technicians in 1988, there was two of them doing the same job, so they shared a working week, and then they I think there was a, the job became vacant again later on in 89, and Mark was one of the candidates who subsequently became a technician there, shared the job with somebody else, and is, I think that's still the case now up to the present.
So when did you leave that job?
In March 1988.
Oh, okay.
So I was there for 3 years.
So after that, presumably you went on that enterprise allowance.
Yes, I went. I was self-employed first of all, and that was really hard work because I didn't know how to make contacts. I didn't know how to kind of promote my particular way of working, my business. And so I think I had contacts enough to get me work. And then in the latter part of 1988, I went on an excavation, archaeological excavation, which took me to Israel. So after that, I decided I needed financially to find permanent work, because from March until November 1988, I'd had very little money, a little bit of work. And to take my mind off from matters, I went on a excavation. So I sort of hired out my services in exchange for flight and board and lodging in Israel for 3 months, which worked really well. That was a great experience, I actually made a lot of contacts there. But I was worried about when I got back to England, what would I do? So the only opportunity, unless it was part-time work, was full-time work. So I applied while I was in Israel. I wrote a letter and following up a job advert. Actually, I think I applied before I went away, but I didn't hear until I was in Israel. And November 88, I got offered a job at a fabrication workshop in Hackney, which was close to the kind of line of work that I was fairly conversant with, i.e. fabrication and welding. So I joined a group of workers in Hackney from 1988, November 1988, until August 1990. So that gave me more experience and also full-time work.
Yeah, and could you kind of make some of your own sculptures when you were there?
No, it was always a case that making sculpture was a very timely kind of activity, and materials and everything, and it was always difficult to appropriate, even though I had the facility to actually work, do my own work while I was working for some other kind of concern. And the main factor was there was just no time. There was just no time to do my own work. When I was a technician at a college, I could consider doing some work, but even then it was mainly because it was along the same lines of working as an artist. But when I was working in a fabrication workshop, there was just no chance. It was a case of making gates and railings, and the experience was great, but it just didn't permit any other activity. So I would make work of my own in the weekend, and I had the railway arch by that time. So,
And when did you actually leave the area? You know, when did you have to hand over your last house? That was the one where you had the railway arch.
Right. We moved into 55 Dyersholt Road in 1989. And that gave us another lease of an Acme house with studio space. I had the arch, railway arch, down the road. Mm-hmm. So from 1989, I would say I might have had some sort of a studio in the house, because that was obviously the first reason for having the house, to keep up with a studio. So, but it wasn't very practicable, in as much as there was a front door to negotiate, and also somebody else as well who needed a studio more, because Rob had a terrible studio sort of situation where he had put in with some other artists in a development, and developed this showing this studio space in Shoreditch, and then that had fallen through because the owner of the place had raised the rent by about three times, so he was priced out of the studio. So he needed to find another space. I think at that time I found the railway arch close by, which was actually a railway arch which was hired by Wandsworth Arts for a particular project in the area, and we got to be involved in the project that summer. And then Wandsworth Arts were giving up the tenancy of the railway arch, so we just inquired if it was possible to negotiate directly with Railtrack, with London Transport, British Rail. So directly, and then we took up the tenancy there. There was about three of us, three artists took on this railway arch, and that sort of answered my studio needs. And that was from 1990. I then became self-employed for the second time and joined the Enterprise Allowance Scheme and got myself a little bit more prepared for what was involved. And I worked for other sculptors and had some clients, and was able to generate enough work to keep being self-employed until 1997.
So was you then selling your work?
I was mainly selling my skills, because selling work was never a realistic option. It was always a possibility, and that was all to do with having exhibitions and contacts and galleries, and it was always a very slow process. It was nothing guaranteed, whereas by the time I was self-employed again, I was able to advertise for work directly. So.
So what sort of things did you do? Did you do like casting? And
I did some casting, I did some commissions for people. I was also able to be seen by other sculptors who had commissioned work to be seen as hireable, to be able to be employed by them for particular skills.
So when you say you had a commission, what did that involve?
Well, either it was a commission that I generated myself, which would be private individuals who wanted to a piece of work. One example was I did a commission which involved a memorial stone for somebody who wanted to commemorate their father, who was a musician. So they were artists and professional people themselves, so they wanted to commission a particular artwork, fortunately I was able to submit a design, which, having got to know them, I was able to give them a design and work to a brief, and then got more involved with the project, which was subsequently cited in a cemetery in Manor Park Cemetery. Southgate Cemetery. I'm thinking of something else. So
something like that. Would it be advertised in Artist Newsletter and then you'd apply? Or?
Well, it could have been advertised in Artist Newsletter, but the person who commissioned me, he was also a member of Art East initially, so he got to know me. I got to know him. In fact, he liked my work very much from 1985, from the Vortex Gallery exhibition. And then when his father passed away in 1987, they approached me, him and his brother approached me with the offer of commissioning me to do a memorial for his father, which I had to get involved with the design of it. And I think they just wanted a piece of work, really. They liked the work, and provided I was able to meet the criteria for the cemetery, it was possible to... Yeah, I mean, it wasn't serious money. It was a particular just job. It was... it was probably a few hundred pounds work.
But you managed to, in that time, generate an income.
Yes, being self-employed, I think, makes you want to generate income somehow or the other. So you could either supplement it by part-time teaching. Mm. Some people worked in a gallery. I mean, Rob was also on the, Rob Lewenstein was also on the Enterprise Allowance Scheme. He worked for, he hired himself out as a gallery assistant to the Mal Gallery, so he was able to be self-employed on that capacity. And they had gallery invigilators and people like that. And for me, I had practical skills where I could actually either I had the tools and the means to make work, yeah, or else I was able to hire myself out as a technician or a practitioner, fabricator, welder, whatever.
And around that time, was you doing the workshops with schools and so forth?
Yes, that was also a possibility you could generate, but there was never an awful lot of money in that because you had to be. It was dependent upon what the school could actually generate in terms of a fee. So I think it was getting better towards the end of the 80s when residencies, schools' residencies actually merited some kind of budget, either by the school or by the Waldorf Arts or whatever.
So when you was working in the railway arch, was that kind of coming up to 1990?
Yes, I was also taking on work there because I had premises which could be used for making things, and other artists were also looking to site work in various parts of London, and they might be successful in securing a commission, and then they needed people to carry it out to a design that they may have put together. So I was working for other artists as well. So some of the work I did finally ended up in places like Haringey. Haringey had a very good outreach kind of commissioning process, which was fairly straightforward, and that would be in relation to housing estates or schools or whatever, or hospitals. Who would be advertising? They would advertise in artist newsletter, and people and artists would then subsequently would advertise in artist newsletter for people to help towards a metal commission or whatever, metal work commission. And I either would see it in artist newsletter, or I would hear about it through word of mouth. People would hear about it. Yeah.